Every Thursday night, you ask the questions, DT gives you his answers. No holds barred.
It's Q&A with Don Tony. This is your chance to speak your mind and be heard about anything.
Q&A with Don Tony. And now, your host, Don Tony.
Oh my God, I look like a derelict in that intro. How many buttons did I have open on that dress shirt? My God. Oh man, I got to update that intro. Hey, my beverage is sticking out. It's protruding the screen. Can't have that. Yeah, this is how us Italians cut the carbs with a pizza cutter. You know, I miss carbs, man. I miss a nice plate of pasta, some good McDonald's French fries, homemade pizza, eggplant parmesan lasagna. I've been on keto for a couple of years. Obviously dirty keto. Otherwise, I would probably be a stick. I'd probably be 177 pounds right now. But too much almond butter, too much chocolate, and a lot of little things that are technically keto, but they're not. But, you know, somebody asked me the other day, DT, why are you so looking forward to getting off of keto? You know, because this shit tastes good. You mean to tell me a nice hot piece of pizza, a little bit of linguine with garlic and oil, a little grated cheese on top, eggplant parmesan, even if you want to go, you know, General Tso's chicken, that tastes good. I miss it. Oh, Don Tony and all the unhealthy foods reunited and it feels so good. Yeah, until this goes back to here. How's everybody doing? I know the intro said Thursday night. Maybe you are watching Thursday night, but I am recording this right now, Wednesday afternoon, July 13th, 2022. This is your latest mailbag hosted by yours truly. Now, I know each week when we do live shows, we answer some questions. Usually the questions have to do with the topics at hand for the respected episode that we're doing. Here, though, every 2 weeks, we are going to be doing a mailbag, and you have the capabilities of sending in a question that I will cover on the show. You could either send it through the community section over at YouTube, or you could email me, dontony@dontony.com. And I gathered all the good questions that we're going to discuss. Some, I had to simplify a little bit. Because, you know, I don't care how long you write your question. I love reading it. But believe me when I tell you, you don't want half the audience to be like this, nodded out, snoozing, because you wrote 7 paragraphs to explain to me why theory should not have the briefcase right now. Just say, theory should not have the briefcase right now. What do you think, DT? So I had to simplify a few. Plus, I got a couple of photos. So you don't just have to look at my ugly mug. Now, if the lighting seems a little different, that's because it's daylight right now. I'm doing this in the afternoon. So there's a combination of sunlight and fake light. And I could use a Bud Light right now. All right, let's get into the mailbag and we get out of here as quickly as we started. Robinette the Fourth. He knows that I won't give him some bullshit answer because over the last 15 years, he realized that I am not capable of doing that. Robert, I am capable of lying. I just don't like to because I don't want to get caught in a lie down the line. You know, that's the problem with lying, especially if it's a good lie. You know, you got to back that shit up for the rest of your life. You know, and sometimes you got people out there that are purposely trying to trip you up. And if they think you lied about something, they'll hit you when you least expect it. You know, I don't want to get into any specific examples, but I can't tell you how many people we caught lying online over the last, 7 years. And some of the lies, you look back at it and you say to yourself, like, man, you know, what was the purpose of telling us that you got laid about someone? You know, like they made this whole scenario that you wouldn't even use it for a Lifetime movie. And then, you know, you're like, you know, something just doesn't smell right. It doesn't pass the smell test. And then 6 months later, oh, how is so-and-so doing? Who? Exactly. But yeah, I could lie. I just choose not to. Believe it or not, his grandmother, who has not watched wrestling since the Mid-South days at the Bernard Civic Center, listened to my podcast all the way up to her death. She said the doctors were always lying, which they weren't, and that I was a straight shooter she needed. Wow, that's pretty awesome, man. She couldn't leave me anything in the will? Nothing? I'm joking. All right, let's get to his question, but you know, rest in peace to your grandma. My grandma, when she was alive, I was closer to her than my own parents back then. And that was because I royally fucked up when I was younger. And my parents, you know, they didn't want to give up on me, but they needed me to hit rock bottom. My grandmother just never had the heart to see me hit rock bottom. She was always there for me. And she's the reason why I'm here right now. She got me into wrestling. But your question is a good one. He sent me this picture. This is an actual WWE Superstars figure that is on sale, made by Mattel. And he wanted to know, did WWE release this figure too early? He doesn't understand this figure. He said, have we ever seen this gimmick? Bray Wyatt with the top hat, and which is really supposed to be, I guess, a scarf. It just kind of looks like two pieces of plastic stapled together. But he's like, DT, I never saw this before. Was this prematurely released? And the answer is no. Check this out. Bray Wyatt actually wore that on at least one Firefly Funhouse segment with Alexa Bliss. And I do remember covering that Raw that night, saying like, man, I want that fucking top hat. I could swear, I mean, look, I have not opened up any of these. I have about 15 to 20 of these boxes. All different Bray Wyatt, you know, collector's boxes. You know, we were giving them away on the shows and then we just stopped for a little while. But I could swear that in one of those gift boxes, they do have, not saying the top hat, believe me, if they had the top hat in one of those boxes, I'd be wearing it on every show. It sure beats this. But no, if they sold something like that, man, I would have been the first to buy it. But I could swear there was something, maybe it was a sticker or something. But no, that was a gimmick. That was an outfit he wore in an episode of Raw back then. So hopefully, you know, I gave you the answer that you wanted. So, all right, James Campbell. Who is my favorite announcer of all time and why? And I guess I have to choose from this list. Howard Finkel, Lillian Garcia, Tony Chimble, Greg Hamilton, or someone else. Okay, so I can choose anybody I want. Well, for me, of all time, my favorite is Howard Finkel. I even enjoyed his little feud with Lillian Garcia when he was like, hey, honey, didn't they do like the Tux versus, wasn't there like a tux versus, what would Lillian's outfit have been, a dress? I could have sworn they did a match where one of them had to be stripped down and Howard Finkel got stripped down to his tidy whities. But, you know, it was interesting after all those years to see WWE trying to make Howard Finkel into a dirty old man. You know, something about WWE and someone at some point always having to be the dirty old man. I love that guy. That guy was awesome. Brings me back to my childhood. Now, as far as a personal appreciation for an announcer, it's this man. Stephen DeAngelis, Horshack was his nickname. He used to introduce all the ECW wrestlers back in the day. I had the privilege of being friendly with him for a little while. I have not talked to him in many years. I hope he is doing well. But really, really genuinely good guy. And I was legitimately pissed off when WWE went with Justin Roberts instead of Stephen DeAngelis when they brought back their rendition of ECW. That guy, class act. And I've told the stories in the past when we talked about Off-Broadway and being a personal guest, hanging out with Stephen DeAngelis at his Off-Broadway shows that he produced. So, you know, on a personal level, he will always have a place in my heart. He is a good guy, man. One of the good guys. Bill Apter, too, in that picture. Bill Abner, beautiful man. I can't believe WWE has not put him in the Hall of Fame. WWE, I know he's not a regular TV personality, or that guy's, you got to start putting some media people in the Hall of Fame. I know that's going to spark a question on the next mailbag. Do you think Dave Meltzer should be in the WWE Hall of Fame, even if it's the legacy wing? I don't know. Dirt sheets, it gets a little difficult. And I never looked at Dave Meltzer as just a dirt sheet writer. I always looked at it as a newsletter. And, you know, you subscribe to newsletters for sports, music, other forms of entertainment. And, you know, it's, you know, the style of how it's written. I don't think Dave Meltzer does anything different in that aspect. But, you know, WWE definitely should put some journalists in. That's just my opinion. So Mark Hicks II, after finding out that Ring of Honor's next event, Death Before Dishonor, is $39.99, Ric Flair's last match is $34.99, if I had to buy one, if I was forced to buy one, you threatened to take away my carbs if I didn't buy one, which would I buy? Ring of Honor, Death Before Dishonor, or Ric Flair's last match? Now, let me make this clear for people that may not know this, but Ric Flair's last match is not just Ric Flair's last match. They're having a whole full-blown wrestling card. We were talking last night on the NXT watch party about Karrion Kross, who's going to be taking on Davey Boy Smith Jr. on that event. There are some pretty good matches lined up for that card. If I was to choose one or the other, I would choose Ric Flair's last match. I don't really want to see it because I'm fearing, you know, that something could go wrong. Yeah, it's like a car accident that you really don't want to look at, but you peek anyway. I hope Ric Flair's match goes without complication. He, after all of his, you know, issues in life, personally, socially, health-wise, you know, the man has done nothing but be involved in wrestling for, what, six decades? 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, 10s, 20s, six decades. And, you know, one last hurrah, you know, I don't want to see it because of the risk. And it's going to spark some other people who may not be in the greatest of health thinking that they can still do it a little bit more, get a nice payday out of it. Look, they're trying to make some serious coin out of this. They have some Ric Flair plaques with a piece of the canvas and an autograph, and it's like $2. So they're trying to make some serious coin. This is not just, you know, when they say Ric Flair's like, oh, I'll wrestle for free. You know, this is about more. No, it's also about making as much money as possible. And look, can you blame them? It's a business too. But I would choose Ric Flair's last match over Ring of Honor. None against Ring of Honor. But you look at the wrestlers on that card, just because Tony Khan owns it, just because I'm a fan of AEW, you cannot force feed me to want to have to like Ring of Honor, to have to follow Ring of Honor. You know, you look at Ring of Honor for the last 10, 15 years of its existence, with the exception of WrestleMania weekends, you know, they drew shit, you know, and a lot of wrestlers, sure, they might have been before they made it famous, but, you know, I just don't have any interest in seeing Lee Moriarty versus Jonathan Gresham. I don't care about Wheeler Yuta. Doesn't mean that I don't appreciate his work and I don't mind watching him once in a while. I'm not paying $40 for that. That's me. But if you want to pay $40 for that, I totally respect that. That's cool. You know, that's the one thing that we're supposed to remember about wrestling. You're not forced to like what other people like. And you're not forced to hate what other people hate. You can come out and say, look, I only watch WWE. You come out and say, look, I only watch AEW. You come out and say, look, I don't watch anything but my local indies. That doesn't make you less of a wrestling fan. Why? Because I like the Mets. If I don't follow every other baseball team, I'm not a baseball fan. Never bought into that. And I also never buy into, oh, because I do a podcast, I got to cover this. Believe me, if I start hating AEW, I will stop covering it. For a little while, I stopped doing Wednesday Night Dynamite because of just that climate online, that real toxic climate. And to me, it just turned me off. And I'm like, look, when we cover these shows, we give opinions and ideas, and we're showing support. We're bringing up topics. And those discussions may spark interest in watching a company or not watching a company. So if you're going to do the work, put in the hours, invest time, energy, and emotion, and then you just feel that the opposite side is just toxic, 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 you know, it does give you the vibe like, man, I'll do something else instead of that. So now I'm back to doing Wednesday Night Dynamite because of NXT and because I like AEW. But no question, you know, we don't spend an hour recapping each show now. We spend 5-10 minutes. But we will have conversations about things going on in those promotions. So, Chris Annis. Mr. Don Tony, I've been a pro wrestling fan for 40 years. I've seen some things in wrestling, some good, some bad, and in the end, I just enjoy wrestling. It's a great segue. Not intentional. I listened to you years ago and then lost track. I'm so glad I refound you on YouTube. I've been having a blast the past few weeks with your show. Thank you for everything. Sincerely, Cappy Caveman. Every time I see Cappy Caveman's name pop up, I always think of this cartoon. Does anybody, you old like me, and remember this? You know what's funny about this show, Captain Caveman? Captain Caveman! I don't remember the Teen Angels. You would think if you were a preteen or a teen watching this back in the day, you would think that maybe you would probably focus on the Teen Angels more than Captain Caveman. But for some reason, when I try to think back when I watched Captain Caveman, I do not remember the Teen Angels. They look like Josie and the Pussycats. I do not remember the Teen Angels. Was that supposed to be a knockoff of like Charlie's Angels? I don't know. But shout out to Cappy Caveman. So George Ford, if I were WWE and I could pick up one male and one female from AEW who never wrestled in WWE, who would I choose? Very easy to answer. On the female side, I would choose Thunder Rosa. Thunder Rosa, talented, great attitude, very, very tough exterior, tough interior as well, role model. You know, you could see WWE could definitely market, you know, the look, the face paint. You know, it's everything I like about Thunder Rosa. Look, I remember, you know, it's funny. It was not that long ago that Thunder Rosa was starting to make a name for herself in NWA. And we talked about her and we said, remember that name? You know, that was right around the time I think she was venturing or teasing a little bit of MMA as well. And look how big she has become. And I think the WWE machine would make her that much bigger just because of the machine involved. And you make it to WWE, I mean, it's very, very hard to not become a household name, seriously. So I would choose Thunder Rosa. On the male side, very easy as well. I would choose MJF. I just think that guy, you know, yes, he would be watered down. I think, look, you know, here's a good example of it. When the Dudleys first went to WWE, you know, they used the F-bombs in ECW quite a bit. And you got used to that. And then when you would have Devon get on the mic in WWE, even on a pay-per-view, and he would say, I don't give a damn about what you say, you know, you're kind of like, oh, just sneaking an F-bomb here and there. So it was something to get used to, you know, when you hear someone use words other than expletives. MJF would have to do the same thing in WWE. You know, be able to say asshole or son of a bitch and this and that, but you know, it would be some getting used to, but MJF. All right, non-wrestling question. Gary Vaughn, with my knowledge in a mob, what do I think about the film Donnie Brasco? Does my fiance share my taste in movies? And he is the gentleman that I knew I had a birthday shout out to do last week, and I couldn't remember who it was. So happy belated birthday, Gary Vaughn. Much love. First of all, my fiance, she likes similar movies as me. She doesn't like my comedic humor, my comedic taste in movies. Like, her comedy movies is like Pretty Woman, you know, maybe something on Lifetime, BET. For me, it's Spaceballs. For me, it's The Adventures of Ford Fairlane. For me, even once in a while, I'll watch Airplane. You know, Roger, Roger, over, over. You know, oh my God, he's in the hospital. Oh my God, what is it? It's a building filled with patients, but that's not important right now. I like stupid behavior, you know, comments like that, stupid humor. I'd laugh at that shit all day long. And she's like, what's so funny? I'm like, nothing. Like, Family Guy. I'm a late bloomer to being a fan of Family Guy. She can't get into that. But as far as the movie Donnie Brasco, and by the way, yes, I did grab a screenshot of the DVD. That's starring Al Pacino, Johnny Depp. Two things about Donnie Brasco. I've told this growing up Don Tony story many times over the years. I met Johnny Depp when he was filming Donnie Brasco. And if you and just to show you, I'm not even lying about this. You could do a Google search and you'll see the time, location, and everything. When I got married in 1999, got it annulled 6 months later, I had an engagement party at a restaurant called Casablanca. And Casablanca was in Ridgewood, Queens, Middle Village, Queens, borderline of there. And friend of the family used to own that restaurant. And one time before, I think, the engagement party, my father calls me up. He calls my mom, actually. And she says, everybody get dressed. We're going out to eat. It's like, okay, where are we going? We're going to Casablanca. Why? Johnny Depp was there. Johnny Depp was having dinner there, and he was meeting with some people in the neighborhood to expand on his character that he was doing for Donnie Brasco. I met Johnny Depp. I actually thought he was a little bit of a dick at that time. Now, let's look at the time frame. We're talking about 90s, not now. But, you know, as far as him playing the character, Donnie Brasco, real name Joey Pistone, not Joey Fatone, Pistone, Pistone. That's how we say it here in our neck of the woods. Pistone. It was loosely based on Joey Pistone. People that don't know, Joey Pistone was an FBI informant, and he was infiltrating the mob and then, you know, got a little too deep. They wanted him to kill somebody, whack somebody, you know, so they turned it into a movie. I watched the movie. I thought it was okay. You know, the problem with me with living in this neighborhood and being around real gangsters, fake gangsters, cardboard gangsters, wannabe gangsters, old school, new school. You know, when you're around it, you see it, you feel it. When you watch it in a movie and you could tell they're sensationalizing it or they're mocking it, it turns me off. You know, I actually watched the other day for like the 95th time, New Jack City. One of my favorite movies of all time. But if you go back and you watch New Jack City, when they're in the bar and there's a couple of Italians that are telling like Wesley Snipes, the fuck out of our neighborhood. You know, when you had this one Italian, this Guinea in the movie, and he's like, with his fingers, like, sometimes, I'm like, was scissor me, bitch? Nobody fucking did that. They just over-exaggerated. And they made the Italians look like goofs in that movie. Remember you had that knife and he cut the ponytail off that guy? When I saw that in real time, back when New Jack City came out, I was like, good. Cut that motherfucker Italian's ponytail off. Fucking goof. So I saw Donnie Brasco. I didn't like it. I thought it was a good movie. I thought the way it was presented was great, but it was very loosely exaggerated from the actual movie. So, all right. So fly. Do I think Kenny Omega, in hindsight, should have gone to WWE as a free agent a couple of years ago? Where is my Kenny Omega picture? Oh, here it is. Not real. He respects him wanting to be with and help his friends create a company. He feels like he's lost a lot of productive years he could have had in WWE, and his style would have added years to his career. Look, this is the problem. You know what's funny? I don't have the thumbnail right now, but we know Edge is right around the corner of returning to WWE. They're doing the cryptic videos teasing his return. And some people want Bray Wyatt incorporated in it in some capacity. And I watched a guy who is a hardcore AEW fan who is a podcaster too. I saw him make a really cool banner with the SummerSlam graphics and the fonts and everything. And it says Finn Balor, Damian Priest, Judgment Day versus Edge, Bray Wyatt, Street Fight. Street Fight. And I laughed when I saw it. And I said, that's the fucking AEW mentality right now. Everything's got to involve the table, chairs, blood, street fight. Referees don't fucking enforce the rules. You know, when you see, this is the problem in AEW, and it's going to be a problem down the line. People are getting numb to a lot of the excessive violence. I'm not complaining about it. I enjoy it, but people are getting numb. When everybody goes through a table, nobody goes through a table, you know? So the thing is, because you're so used to that in AEW, they're like street fight, street fight, street fight, street fight. And the thing with Kenny Omega is, you know, he became a sports entertainer when he started showing up in Impact Wrestling. And for about 6 to 8 months, I kept saying on my shows, how do you like Kenny Omega, the sports entertainer? And people got very angry at me. Kenny Omega is not a sports entertainer. Huh? What are you talking about? You see him coming out with Don Callis, with the Good Brothers, all the interference, the fucking goof with the camera, Michael Nakazawa, or him wearing the over-the-top clothes, acting like a prima donna. Kenny Omega became a sports entertainer. And the thing is that if he would have went to WWE, he would have had more of an AJ Styles arsenal that is in WWE. Look at Finn Balor. Finn Balor, coup de grace, 1914, you know, sling blade, whatever he does. It's like 5 moves. But a lot of other shit that he used to do, he doesn't do anymore. Why? Because WWE wants to save his career. So if Kenny Omega would have went to WWE, you know, we would not have gotten many of those 5-star matches. So you can enjoy your 5-star matches all you want. But when people's bodies start breaking down sooner, you know, then you realize, okay, you know, I'm living for the moment, but what about tomorrow? So I don't know if Kenny Omega would have become this larger than life. I think he would be in the Finn Balor. I believe AJ Styles is much higher on the food chain than Finn Balor is in WWE for a long time. I don't think Kenny Omega would have reached AJ Styles levels as amongst the wrestling fans go. First of all, Kenny Omega would have been, I think, more of a heel than anything else. I think he would have been a damn good one in WWE, but I don't see where he would have been on that elite level that he would have been headlining pay-per-views for an extended period of time. And I know people who are hardcore Kenny Omega fans don't like what I'm saying. It's not a knock on Kenny Omega. It's just adapting to the WWE style, because it is a totally different style. No denying that whatsoever. And Kenny Omega's offense in New Japan took maybe years off of his career as well, you know, but some wrestlers, they have to put it all out in the ring. I don't think Kenny Omega regrets anything that he's done. I don't think he should regret it. He's had a tremendous career. But now he's getting older, and he realizes, okay, I got to be really fucking careful. You think AJ Styles cares about having 5-star matches anymore? You think Sami Zayn does, Kevin Owens, anyone else? No, they just want to entertain the fans and not embarrass themselves out there. All right, James Campbell, a lot of people think Theory. By the way, James did not write an essay. When I used the example earlier about Theory cashing in, it's nobody on this list. A lot of people think Theory will fail at his cash-in, but we've talked about the possibility of a young gun they want to groom and put over big, with the possibility of the biggest win in recent history by ending Roman Reigns' streak. This seems like the perfect spot to do it with Theory. And if not Theory, what about Riddle? Fans, I think, look, Theory is going to be a big star. Forcing Theory as Universal Champion, WWE Champion, would backfire tremendously. You're not going to force fans into really liking him as a babyface or a heel because you forced the belt on him. Will he get a championship run sooner than later? Probably, but not at the expense of Cody, maybe Bobby Lashley, Drew McIntyre, Seth Rollins, and a few others. There is absolutely no rush. If they want to have that moniker, the youngest heavyweight champion of all time, that's different. Then obviously you got to do it within a certain period of time. But for me, there is no reason. Theory's going to be a star. Theory does not need the moniker to have 10, 20, 30 years from now, the youngest WWE champion of all time. We don't need that. He doesn't need that either. You know, The Rock, Randy Orton, special circumstances, special people related to Hall of Famers. Theory, though, I would not take that moniker off of someone else and put it on him simply because he's going to be a big star. He could be a big star without that moniker. Baseball question. Roger Rubio is going to watch his San Francisco Giants play the Brewers. He's got to drive 4 hours to go to San Francisco. Any tips for making a long drive? Some memories and stories going to a baseball game. Well, very quickly, I don't know if you got to go 4 hours each way. If you do, man, that's, you know, props to you. That is awesome. 4 hours each way on one night is pretty rough, man. Maybe you stay in a hotel. Maybe you make a weekend out of it. I would, you know, grab a podcast, anybody's, you know, or I don't know if you have Spotify or something like that. You know, if you tune into somebody's podcast that runs about 2-3 hours, you know, it does help with the time. It helps me, you know, when I drive 2-3 hours, if I'm going to Connecticut or something else, that does kill some of the time. I also, you know, maybe you stop halfway through, you know, get something to eat, fill up some gas, things like that. As far as baseball memories go, you know, there's so many that I have had going back to when my dad took me to a game in 1976 when the Yankees were in the playoffs. Going to one of the World Series games in 2001 where Brocious hit the home run against the Diamondbacks. I came home and did my hotline that night, and the building was shaking. You know, going to Met games in 85 when I used to hang out in Woodhaven, Queens, those are amazing memories, no pun intended. You know, I got a lot of fond baseball memories, and they're good. And guess what? If anybody was a Mets fan, they just retired Keith Hernandez's number 17 this past weekend. I've showed you the video a few times. I went to Shea Stadium, the 17th last game at Shea Stadium, and what they were doing, counting down the final days that Shea Stadium had games, they would have a number in center field. And I went to the 17th game, and Keith Hernandez was in center field, and I got teary-eyed. I mean, I remember him kissing the number 17 and putting his hand on it. I have the video of it. You'll hear me doing commentary. I videotaped it, and I've played it here on the show once or twice over the years. So I have a lot of fond memories going to games. But I'll be having a good time, man. It's cool, very cool to see people that dedicated to their teams, you know? All right, moving on along. How long have we gone so far? 35 minutes? All right, I think we're managing time good. Tuxedo Earth, do I think Shanky and Jinder are the new Al Snow and Steve Blackman? No. I don't see Jinder becoming a comedy act. Seeing them get squashed by the vicious Viking Raiders recently concerns me quite a bit. I don't see that tag team lasting. Who do I see defeating this man for the IC title, I think it could be Sami Zayn down the line. If Sami Zayn ends up turning babyface after we go through this next stage, I could see Sami Zayn being the one to dethrone Gunther. I look at other wrestlers. If Drew McIntyre does not get another heavyweight title bid soon, I could see a Drew McIntyre-Gunther feud with Drew getting the championship. I know some people may think it's a step down for Drew McIntyre. You can't look at it that way. You can't look at it. You know, some people are very, very angry now about the titles being unified. Some people are very, very angry right now that Roman and the Usos have the stranglehold on all the belts. Remember that thumbnail that I said earlier this year? Be careful what you wish for. And you remember all the people that I showed that were champions before? Now they have no shot right now of getting a heavyweight title. So even though something may sound like a good idea, once it's executed and you realize that it could damage others, you know, then it's a problem. And this, I guess, segues, not intentional, but Guerrero G, with the mess they did this past SmackDown with McIntyre and Sheamus. Remember when Sheamus was faking that he might have COVID? Are they stalling to finalize McIntyre versus Fury as the match at Clash at the Castle? And could we see Sheamus versus Roman Reigns instead? This has been the banner all along. Yes, I know Cody is on there. This is before Cody got injured. They are still showing a variation of this banner. Drew McIntyre is heavily featured on this banner. I do not see any way that Drew McIntyre faces Tyson Fury at Clash at the Castle. There is only one match I believe these fans want to see live, and that is Drew McIntyre versus Roman Reigns. I do not see in any way, shape, or form that it is Sheamus versus Roman Reigns. I would be shocked, not surprised, shocked, if it ended up being Sheamus versus Roman Reigns. Near Rofe. Talking about John Cena a little bit. Where is my John Cena photo? I like this photo. It just looks like a heel John Cena. What do I think would have happened if Vince McMahon pulled the trigger on John Cena's heel turn? Do I think it would have worked? How long would it have lasted? Look, man, I've been doing these shows for decades, and there are tons and tons of synopsis from the Don Tony and Kevin Castle show, from Breakfast with Blasi, later on Breakfast Soup, and you will see the same sentence written over the years. John Cena will not turn heel. As much as people fantasize, think it could happen, might happen, consider it, not going to turn heel. So if he would have turned heel at the time, he would have been able to pull it off because he could go thugonomics even if he warded it down and he would piss off people. So John Cena, if anybody could pull off turning heel again, he could do it. I think it would have resulted in similar to what if you would have turned Sting heel in WCW. You know what I mean? There's just some people that you turn and you realize that it is kind of a mistake. You know, a lot of people think turning Steve Austin heel in 2001, I think it was, they thought that was a huge mistake at the time. I disagree. I think Steve Austin was fucking vicious at that time. Sure, it seemed like it sacrificed a lot of merch, and he was the most over wrestler in the company, but I don't look at it as a mistake. But no, I don't. John Cena would have made it work, but I don't see the scenario where it would have happened. There was no one else really to replace him. And when you saw him feuding with The Rock, you saw that, you know, it got challenging for The Rock at some points. Do I think AEW will do a Middle East show in the next 5 years? No, I don't think so. I don't think so. The logistics are very, very rough. I don't think WWE has a monopoly on the Middle East, but it is more difficult than you think. I mean, look how long it took AEW to go to the West Coast. They're still yearning for Canada and some other places. Do I see it? No. I wish they would. I think it would be a fun alternative for wrestling fans in that neck of the world, but I say no. Devin M., will Vince McMahon step down from creative amidst all the legal messes. It's a very good possibility. The fact that Vince is still at TV shows how lack of concern for the board of directors that Vince is there. If Vince McMahon was causing chaos by still being there, the board of directors would be having emergency meetings. Stephanie and others would be having meetings trying to figure out what could we do about this. The fact that Vince is still there shows you. And as I said before, I'm not defending Vince McMahon, but when you look at the overall culture from the late 90s to the late 2000s or mid 90s to the mid 2000s, you realize that, you know, this is not a surprise. And most of the people in wrestling or in journalism that have been around for a long time, they know it's not a surprise. They know this is not as big of a story as you think. They only grab onto that $100,000 for the paralegal salary because they understand the other stuff. You know, it's nobody's surprise at all. But as I've been saying on other shows, I think ultimately what could happen is that if the board really thinks Vince needs to go, the board, Stephanie, whoever you want to choose, I think it would be Stephanie, would tell Vince, say, listen, leave on your own terms. Resign. Retire. Retire is an even better word. Can you imagine if Vince McMahon retires and the IWC and the haters, the people that despise WWE and Vince, they don't get the satisfaction that Vince is fired, removed, voted off, that Vince decides, I'm going to retire. I could picture it a mile away. And that will not be good enough by a lot of people online. They want blood. They want blood. And it's a little bit disturbing. I think the people who were directly abused, if anybody was abused, those are the ones that should be looking for blood. There's some very obsessed people online that I think are in for a rude awakening. Rockstar Wolfie. We obviously know that I like pro wrestling. What are some of my interests outside of wrestling? I love forensics. I love crime dramas, you know, investigation. I love trying to learn a little bit of our history, which is kind of wild because I despise science and social studies growing up. I've been learning about, you know, our solar system beyond what could be out there. But that's pretty much it. I mean, I used to be in hobbies, used to be into my boat, restoring my boat, restoring my Lincoln. I sold my boat. I still have my Lincoln. Right now, you get older, you know, you don't have as much energy as you used to, and you'd be surprised how much work is involved doing these shows. Hell, I'm supposed to still record some commercials for Pro Wrestling TV, and I haven't done it yet. And this is only 3 days later, and I got an email today like, hey, man, did you record the commercials yet? I'm like, shit, it's Wednesday. You know, I need a couple more days, brother. So there's a lot of work. I mean, Monday I do a show. Tuesday I do a watch party and a show. Wednesday I do a show. Thursday I see my family, you know, my parents. Friday I do two watch parties. Saturday I do a show. Sunday I do a show. So, you know, it's, but as you will see in the coming months, these shows are going to be scaled back dramatically, but for the better. If you look at the preview, I mean, I know a lot of you are going to watch this show late, but if you look at the preview for Wednesday Night Dynamite, July 13th, you'll see there might only be 6 or 7 lines of topics. We're going to start having much less as far as specific topics. So when we do a lot of shows, they're not draining. Just easy listening. Hour, maybe a little more, done. Easy listening, easy viewing. But those are my hobbies for the most part. I do miss working on my boat. You know, the sad thing about it is we go to a diner here in Howard Beach called the Cross Bay Diner. And right behind the diner, there's the marina. And right across the water, my boat. Because the person that bought it off of me lives right across the marina. So every time I go to the diner, I see my boat. And it upsets me because I had that boat for 25 years. So, all right. Mr. Cool Johnny Dude 666, which I think is Charlie Conway on the chats. He says Chris Benoit's son says that his father will be in the WWE Hall of Fame. Did I take a picture of Chris and his son? I thought I did. Hold on. There was a reason why I wanted to show you the picture. Let me see if I have it. I could have. Wow. Oh, yeah. Here it is. Here it is. Let me put this on the screen. Might not be perfectly centered, but I'll take it. Chris Benoit's son says he hopes his dad will be in the WWE Hall of Fame soon. He told that to Chris Van Vliet. And Chris Benoit's son claims that he's working on it. I don't know what he means by working on it with WWE. My interpretation, he probably keeps sending letters to WWE. Please put my dad in. Please put my dad in. My dad, what happened was something he couldn't control. Please put my dad in. Please put my dad in. Please put my dad in. That's what I think he means by working on it. I don't think there's negotiations. Look, man, this is such a tough subject to get into. I do not believe his father will ever be put in the WWE Hall of Fame. But I also feel terrible for that family. I feel terrible for Nancy's family. I feel terrible for everybody who was involved, the wrestlers as well, because everybody that came across Chris Benoit says the same thing. Guy wasn't an evil man. He was not a violent man. Yes, he was intense in the ring, but outside the ring, he showed no signs of this. You know, so everybody on that side of the coin, you know, just refused to accept that Chris Benoit was a murderer. You know, the problem is, like I said, there is no magic potion out there that we could get the answer. God is, would however God you worship, is not going to come down one day and do an episode of Ask Me Anything. Why did Chris kill his family? We're never going to know the answer. You think you know. His father thinks he knows. His son thinks he knows. Everybody, his close friends think they know. They'll never know completely. They'll never know completely. And that's horrible. That's sad. It's tough. It's rough. I think about my dad. And I thought about my dad today when I was, you know, pulling the picture of David Benoit. You know, if my dad suddenly, you know, got dementia or something and he killed someone that I love, I guarantee you, knowing my father as I do, I know my father does not have a evil bone in his body to want to hurt anybody. You know, he'll protect his family, but that's it. So something out of the ordinary had to push my father over the edge. Addiction, piece of ass, head trauma. You know, hopefully I never have to deal with that. But this is a subject, as much as people think they know the answer, they will never know the answer. And that's a very rough pill for their family to swallow. You said you were going to be in my neck of the woods August 4th to August 6th. As far as meeting up, I'll be honest with you, man. It is very, very difficult for me to meet up with anybody. It's not that I'm not sociable, but even I'm looking at those dates and, you know, it's 1 month before my wedding. I got rehearsals. Plus, I have an office to run. Once in a while, I get somebody who will make a surprise visit to my office that enjoys the shows. And I feel awful sometimes because 90% of the time I have customers in the office and I can't just sit and socialize and talk about the shows and old podcasts and this and that, you know, so it's kind of rough. I usually tell people like, look, we'll all go to a wrestling show, convention or something like that. That's different. I hang out with everybody. But as far as when I'm on, you know, office time, like right now I'm doing this early. And I'm looking at my emails right now, and I'm just, that's why if you see me like looking this way, you know, because if a customer pops up that I got to do something this afternoon, I got to pause this show, which is good because I'm not doing it live and I have the capabilities of doing so, but you know, I can't sacrifice my office, you know, for wrestling stuff. So that's cool you're coming down. I hope you could come down when we do a wrestling event. And hey, man, there's three wrestling promotions that wanted to see me indie manage again. And I told all three, I'm like, yeah, once COVID gets under control, I'll definitely be willing to do it. I have not heard from any of the three. That opportunity comes up, trust me. Trust me. That opportunity comes up that I manage once in a while here in the Northeast. You all know. And you will all be invited. So then we can hang out and have an awesome time. Run DMG. He used to attend wrestling matches at the Memorial Auditorium in Sacramento, California in the mid-90s. The promotion was NWC. He loved the shows. You would have Terry Funk, Sabu, Rob Van Dam would wrestle there. And they used to have a wrestler named Don Juan. Would get some massive heat. Any thoughts on that promotion or Don Juan? I will tell you this much. The funny thing about Don Juan from the NWC, if anyone wants to YouTube it, you'll find some mid-90s shows from this West Coast promotion. And you'd be surprised. Bill Anderson, I think, was one of the announcers there. But Don Juan, the funny thing about it is if you go try to find a bio on him, you can't find nothing. You go try to find retro pictures, unless you grab a screenshot from a YouTube video, from a NWC show, you can't find nothing. There is a Latino wrestler named Don Juan. I think his real name is Espinoza. He came around, I think, in the late 90s. That's not the same guy. I never heard of him all that much, but I did hear of NWC back in the day because when we used to trade tape in the 90s, we would get shows from Detroit that would have Funk and Sabu quite a bit. We would have Michigan. Then we would get some from the West Coast, and I'm pretty sure I have come across one or two tapes over the years from NWC. But that's pretty cool, man. That is pretty cool, and thank you for the kind words, what you wrote. I really do appreciate that. I appreciate everybody's kind words. I really was taken back by what some of you wrote. Some of it we keep off the show because I know some people would interpret it as something otherwise, but very, very appreciative. How many questions we got left? We got not too many. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I think like 8. Some left more than one, so we'll get through them rapidly. Where are we at? 53 minutes? We'll end up going slightly over an hour, but that's cool. Roderick Howard. Whether it's at next year's WrestleMania weekend or another one down the line, when does The Rock finally go into the WWE Hall of Fame? Who would I choose to induct him? He feels like The Rock has several legitimate options, Roman Reigns, John Cena, Steve Austin, Mick Foley, Triple H, Vince McMahon, all who have had tremendous impact on his career. I think The Rock goes in next year. I think that is the perfect opportunity to put The Rock in the Hall of Fame. If The Rock goes in the Hall of Fame next year, I do not see Roman Reigns inducting him because of the rumored match that they're supposed to have. I would have chose Vince McMahon if this latest controversy didn't come out. Because this controversy came out, I think we will end up getting either Steve Austin or John Cena. And believe it or not, I probably would lean towards John Cena. Not saying I wouldn't mind seeing Steve Austin induct The Rock. I'm not saying that at all. But I think John Cena, especially since they both went to Hollywood, especially since they had that one-year-long hyped-up WrestleMania match, which was very unheard of in recent years, I think John Cena would probably be the one, the best choice to put The Rock in. So that's who I would go with. But I do think it's going to happen next year. I'd be surprised if it wasn't next year. Big Daddy Chaos, thank you very much. He sent me a link about a recent article that came out about the WWF referee back in the day, Rita Chatterton, and the alleged, oral sex that she gave on Vince McMahon in a limo back in the 80s. I did read the article. I took a step back. I read it. I saw the comments by Mario Mancini. And, you know, my thoughts on the article, I'll say it like this, and in no way am I defending Vince McMahon. I remember their current affair. I remember Donahue. I remember Inside Edition. I remember all of the shows that were covered. I remember Geraldo and his brother. Wasn't it his brother? You know, that covered the accusations of Vince McMahon with Rita, of Pat Patterson, of Mel Phillips, of others. So this story, unfortunately, in 2022, it feels like people are rehashing it to throw an extra stone at Vince McMahon. Do I think this really happened? Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I really think that Vince McMahon coerced, manipulated, promised things to Rita that wasn't going to happen, and she fell for it. To me, I don't condone what Vince did. To me, it's like, I've said it so many times, flashbacks of going to a bar or a club when a guy just like bullshits his way into getting some pussy, you know, and it's awful and it's terrible. And I also wonder how many wrestlers back in the day went with rats and manipulated them in certain ways. You don't justify bad behavior with other bad behavior. But, you know, to make it seem, not saying anybody in the article was very well written. One of the better articles, I also should say. But, you know, to think that some of the wrestlers who had big positions of power that were not, you know, at the bar afterwards and, you know, women up and coming and people trying to get into business and people who think they could get noticed and, you know, trying to sweet talk their way into getting some type of, you know, sex in return. You know, I told the story with XPW. I'll never reveal the woman's name and I'll never reveal the man's name. But I've told this story and believe me, there are people that used to be in XPW that would confirm this. One of the last times that XPW was in the Northeast at the ECW arena, I was at the hotel after the show was over. It was the same night where I was in the hallway waiting for Rob Black. His door was locked, waiting for him to open it because, you know, we did money, things like that. You know, I ran the bus trips. While I was in the hallway, Danny Doring runs up and down wearing nothing but his birthday suit. And it was hilarious. He was just, you know, just guys having fun. Made me laugh my ass off. But as I was walking to Rob Black's hotel room, there was a door for a room open like 2-3 doors down. And, you know, when you're walking in a hallway in a hotel room and you see a hotel door open, sometimes you just peek as you're walking by. And when I peeked inside the room, there was a female indie valet, I guess you could call her. No, it's not Sunny, before anybody says. Indie valet who was well known in the Northeast but was trying to get a spot in XPW. And she was laid out on a bed, just naked, just sitting there watching TV. And the door was halfway open. And as I'm walking by, I just looked inside the door and I see this naked chick just laying on the bed like nothing. I don't think she realized the door was open. And I just kept walking and I was like, okay. You know, but we find out later on that she slept with somebody in that company and, you know, trying to get a spot. Did she get a spot? No, she didn't. So anybody that worked XPW at those times, you could eliminate them from the list because this was someone that did not get a spot. But, you know, I'm just saying like a lot of shit went down at that time. And this is a disturbing story, no question. But the 80s came and went. The 90s came and went. The 2000s came and went. The 2010s came and went. Now with the 2020s, you know, 80s, 90s, 2000, 5 decades have gone by. I mean,
if this guy didn't get in trouble in the 80s, if he didn't get in trouble in the 90s, you know, I know a lot of people try to say now, like, oh, well, Me Too, and that's why this is out now. No, it's not. This was a story in the early 90s. This was way before Me Too. She made the accusation in the early 90s. She made the accusation within a few years of it happening. It's not like she waited 18 years. So the fact that we're now in the fifth decade and people are still bringing this up, you know, unfortunately, I think Vince has gotten away with this one and we'll never know the complete truth. But I do believe what I read. I do believe it. Okay. Johnny Goodnight. My thoughts on Bill Bahati, Conan, and Disco Inferno. I like their shows. I like their discussions. I am a fan of Bill Bahati. I know on social media, he is very nasty. You know, I probably wouldn't say half the things that he says. And a lot of people despise him. As far as his sources, his connections, his analysis, I like it. The personal stuff and the feuds, I stay away from that. I try not to pay attention to it. So when I talk about him, I'm talking about just the show. I'm not saying anything about the other stuff. Conan and Disco Inferno, very, very entertaining. You know, I agree on some of Disco's views, even outside of wrestling. Some I disagree with. The only thing I don't like about their shows is their YouTube clips. They show up in my feed sometimes. Something came up about Terry Taylor. Oh, no, I know what it was. Now, that's a different one, but here's a good one. Something came up on my feed yesterday. Are Santana and Ortiz, are they at odds with each other? You know, there's been a lot of rumors that Santana and Ortiz don't like each other. So, you know, I see Conan, you know, he obviously is in the know, you know, relationship with these guys. I said, oh, okay, I want to check it out. It's a 2-minute clip, 2 minutes. So I click on it, and it's Disco Inferno shouting out the person with the question. He's reading the question, this and that. And then they finally get to the question, you know, are Santana and Ortiz at odds with each other? And Conan says, yes, they are. And that was the end of the clip. I mean, there's so many clips like that on YouTube where it says, Disco Inferno comments on this and that. And it'll be like a 5-word answer, and that's the end of the clip. So, I find it funny. But I do like their shows. I do like that they are very, very direct and brutally honest. I may not agree with everything that they say, but they do a good job. All right, James McGarry. He is a transplanted Queens Italian who moved to Texas 3 years ago. He's my dad's age and gets great enjoyment from my insight and intelligent approach in escapism. His dad died May 2nd, 1999. Holy shit. That was the day I got married. I kid you not. I just revealed that. That's no joke. I got married 6 months later. I got an annulled. Wow. May 2nd, 99, your dad passed. Wow. AEW, he had a couple of comments about some of the topics. First of all, AEW. Shad Khan and Bleacher Report said, or Shah Khan, said that Tony Khan lost $100 million the first year, spent $20 million of his money on the wrestling game, $5 million or less on Ring of Honor. WWE had no interest, or Apple or Amazon had no interest. I'm saying as far as WWE. He bought something that interests his core. WWE signs Pat McAfee. Triple H uses Bad Bunny. More eyes get more mainstream interest. AEW signs Claudio for 5-star matches. Khan lost $50 million when Black News Network, I guess Shad Khan, went bust. He has the investor seed cash. Has it dried up? Look, when we talk about $100 million, $150 million, $50 million when it comes to the Khan family on the AEW side, you know, when you got 10 $1 billion plus. You could lose $100 million every year after 10 years. It is just a billion-dollar loss. I know that's not good. Of course it's not good. But, you know, where you lose money somewhere, you might gain it somewhere else. So I just don't see AEW having any serious issues unless it just starts losing so much money that they just feel, look, there's no upside. This is a very expensive hobby. I just don't see it getting to that point. I mean, sometimes when you start a new venture, you got to lose money for many, many years before you make it. I don't compare, you know, my podcasting to that, but I spent almost 20 years, 17 years, and making no money at all. Every dollar put into the show and got none of it back. Spent 17 years of website bandwidth, hosting this, giveaways this, 17 years of money, tens of thousands of dollars that I never, ever got back. Why? Because I love doing what I'm doing, and I love providing that, and I love the response and the reaction and the volume of everyone out there who enjoyed it. Now, you know, you're finally reaping some rewards from it. So, sure, it's a lot different now, but we're talking chump change when it comes to them. They could get it a little bit better and sign a crazy TV deal. All that money that's lost is recovered. WrestleNomics, which is Brandon Thurston's page, talks about Thurston having a finance degree. Was he really a wrestling trainer and an indie wrestler? I honestly did not know that. That is very, very interesting. He talks a little bit about WrestleNomics. I like Brandon Thurston. Brandon Thurston actually works very, very hard, but you could see a little bit of the bias. You know, you could definitely see it when there's extra stats being provided with AEW when there is a crappy number to try to make it look better than what it is. For me, you know, the advertisers, the networks, and the companies are the only ones that should be focusing on demos. You know, I look at the overall number. If I have 1 million people tuning into my show and next week 700,000 only tune in, just because more 18 to 34s tuned in than usual, I still have 300,000 people that decided not to tune into my show. Why? That is a big deal. And it's as simple as that. All right, Meltzer. He's read his newsletter since 83. Amazing guy, great historian. Last couple of years, became very political for his fans. Very careful not to say anything negative about AEW. Think of the money that is at stake. He has 20,000 subscribers at $14.50 a month. That is $3.6 million, I'm assuming a year, top of the line. Or at 50,000 subs at $14.50. That's $9 million a year. You know, it is a lot of money. It is a lot of money. And look, I've been a subscriber of his for a very long time. And many months, I don't even touch the newsletter. I just don't have time. I support the guy. And, you know, 10, 20,000 subscribers is not a whole lot of people. Shit, on my Patreon, I can't even get 300 anymore. You know, and you see some of these websites that have patrons and they got 5,000 subscribers. You multiply that by $5 a month. That's 25 G's a month. That is, once you take out taxes, that's still $200,000 a year. It's crazy money. You know, you get to that level where you get a lot of people subscribing where they have to pay, period. You could really make some serious money. And, you know, that's the good thing about it. The problem is with a lot of people today, they get into it with the sole idea of how much money could they make. You don't see people anymore that are going to spend 17 years, let alone 5 years, just putting money out for the love of it. And then maybe one day getting it back. You see people that when their viewership does not increase, they start making excuses why they can't do a show. And excuse after excuse after excuse, and then that's when people usually fade away. It's rough. It's very tough. Look, even though, you know, I've had my share of haters, and there's some people in the podcasting world that say some really horrible things about me. You know, I don't take away the fact that they all work extremely hard at what they do, and that should never be taken for granted. That's why, you know, I'm not going to mention the guy's name here, but I have a guy that was a patron, and he was given $2 a month. And for $2 a month, he gets a minimum of 8 patron exclusive shows, gets ad-free versions of every show I do, so that's another 20 shows a month, has access to thousands and thousands of archived shows on my network. This is not a cheap plug, but I'm just telling you. He gets thousands and thousands of archived episodes, predictions, contests, and whatever else. And the guy sends me a message the other day. He's like, look, could you cancel my membership and can you refund me my $2? I didn't want to pay for this month. I wanted to cancel and I forgot to cancel. I gave the guy his $2 back. But I said to myself, okay, this is a guy that is not feeling he didn't get his money's worth. This is a guy that's trying to rub in my face like, fuck you, Don Tony. Give me $2 back. And that's why, you know, when I joke around as far as channel members here or patrons, you know, when I see people that feel that because I plugged Manscaped, that they don't feel they're getting their $5 worth on Patreon, keep your money, go somewhere else. I'm not going to nail myself on the cross and bleed and work 100 hours a week so you feel that 4 weeks out of the month, that comes out to $1.25 a week, that you didn't get your $1.25's worth. You know, it's this that weird dynamic as well. You just got to try to find a good balance. So, and he says, good luck with the new ventures. Joe Beningo, I know who that is, used to call the Fan, WFAN, late at night and became a Main Street media guy in New York. And he says, you know, from one Italian to another, much love and support. I appreciate that. Thank you. Awesome. Cruiserweight, which wrestling tragedy could, if I could have prevented, which one would I have prevented? Eva Marie wrestling or Jackie Gator wrestling? If I could prevent one, I would have preferred the Jackie Gator not wrestle. I actually think Eva Marie in NXT was not that bad. And I say that loosely. She was not that bad. But I think Eva Marie, if she focused, you know, maybe she could have gotten on the level of a Candice Michelle. Jackie Gator, though, I don't know. Nothing personal against her. What is one amusement park I wish I could go to? I can't remember the name. Was it Adventureland? It was in New Jersey. No, it was not New Jersey. It was upstate New York. I don't remember the name. I'm sure someone is going to, for the next mailbag, is going to come up with it. There was a water park in the 90s in upstate New York. I think it was called Adventureland. Man, it's right on the tip of my tongue too. And there are YouTube videos about this park. It is no longer called the name that it was. I think it might be Adventureland. I might be mixing up Adventureland with something else, but it was a water splash park and people got injured and some people got killed from this water park. But if you go watch the YouTube videos, you will see people, person after person after person, being interviewed who used to go to the park and say that they would go down a water slide and get burns on their bodies like you wouldn't believe. And they had so much fun that it was like a badge of honor. You know, so you would have people that said, oh, yeah, I broke my ankle when I was there, but you know what? I wish it was back. Like, it's just a weird fetish about this park. Man, I'm so pissed off. I almost want to Google it right now. Can I pull it off, everyone? Can I pull it off? Let's see. I'm going to pull it off. Water park. I hope it comes up really quickly. 90s New Jersey injuries. It's got to come up with this. It is legendary. Action Park. Yes. Yes. You guys, you got to do a Google search for Action Park. Watch some of the documentaries on YouTube. Look at all the people that were injured. It's not funny, but I always wanted to go to that park. I used to go fishing in Ramapo, New York, by the Ramapo River. Me and my friends used to drive up to Ramapo very, very early in the morning. I got video of it, too. We used to go in the 90s, more than anything. We would go to Ramapo and trout fish all day long. And it was just beautiful, serene, quiet, calm, beautiful weather. And every time we drove up there, we would see the signs for Action Park. We never went. To this day, I wish I would have went. Action Park. See, I did get the name wrong before. It's not Adventureland. Action Park. Even if you don't live in the United States, look it up on YouTube and just see. Just check out the rides because there's a lot of footage. And check out all the injuries and say to yourself, how could people wish that could come back? All right. Tom Felon, not condoning Vince's behavior at all, but doesn't this woman owe Vince the money back? No, she didn't reveal anything publicly. A friend did. Friend, you know, talked, and, you know, the investigation came out. And just because you do an NDA, if you're part of a publicly traded company, you do owe a little bit of an explanation. So, no. She didn't sing like a little bird, so she doesn't owe the money back. Clearly, she told people about the relationship. She broke the terms of the agreement. Well, you don't know if she broke the terms of the agreement. You know, remember, the NDA was signed and agreed on after the relationship was over. While the relationship was going on, she could say whatever she wants. Hi, hon. What's going on? Nothing. Oh, I'm going to go out with my friends tonight. What are you going to do? Oh, I'm going to stay with Vince. Nothing wrong with that. If people knew about their relationship at the time, there's no violation there. I'm just more concerned about the WWE diva that was released in 2005 that 13 years later, you know, basically blackmailed Vince McMahon. I'm not condoning what Vince did in 05, but 13 years later, when you're in the middle of signing billion-dollar deals, now you think, oh, I'm going to get revenge on this motherfucker now. You know, that sounds pretty fucked up. You know, think about that for a minute. I mean, if she was that disturbed about it, why didn't she go to the legal authorities in 2018? You know, why go to Vince? The money was more important than the action itself. She could have went to the authorities and then sued Vince. I don't know if she would have got 7.5. David from Sacramento. Longtime fan. Oh, actually, well, Tom had a couple more questions. Let me just get into these, if you don't mind. Did the tribalism of the Tuesday Night War hurt wrestling overall prior to the launch of AEW? I'm assuming really Wednesday you meant. Prior to the launch of AEW, Black and Gold NXT was the belle of the ball. Even after the launch of AEW, NXT was widely considered the best show that WWE produced. However, due to the war, he thinks fans boycotted NXT in protest of it. They didn't boycott. Wrestling fans are going to watch what they want to watch. NXT could have been the most, the best product out there, the best produced, but it drew shit viewers. This is an entertainment business that needs to make ratings, make money, make sales. And NXT, just because it's the most produced, best wrestling on TV, you only get 600,000-700,000 viewers. Ring of Honor, for many years, people thought it was the best wrestling on the planet. It drew 300. So, doesn't matter. The reason why NXT is back to its roots is because of what I've been saying for 2.5 years. NXT became too expensive and was not building the stars of tomorrow. And sure, you know, Keith Lee, Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, Bobby Fish, and others, you know, they were very, very important to NXT, no doubt. But we have not seen any dramatic increase in viewers since they went to AEW. I could argue that some of those wrestlers who main evented shows did horrendous numbers, worse than NXT. So no, NXT got too expensive and the ratings were awful. The ratings were doing a million five. Probably would have still had the black and gold. But you can't turn around and only have 600,000 viewers. And then when WWE makes a change, you're like, what are you fucking stupid? You fucking had something great and you ruined it. No, couldn't get the majority of wrestling fans to tune in. Who gets the most viewers, the most money? NXT was not cutting it. You don't pay that kind of money to Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly and others to be on a show for 500,000 viewers. And his final comment, his birthday is on the same as my dad, January 6th. He doesn't like politics, and whether people are Republican or Democrat, he thinks they're all scumbags. He's got some enthusiastic political friends, but on his birthday, he asked that politics are not brought up. And unfortunately, he didn't get that granted, his request on his birthday. Yeah, needed in my dad. It's a shame that my dad's birthday will always have a controversial attachment to it. So two more questions, and we will exit for tonight. I'm going to hold off on the Eddie Guerrero one. Is the last one. David from Sacramento. Longtime fan, no matter if it was doing a solo show or the coast, always loves hearing my views. He wants to talk about Bianca Belair. Do I feel that she is booked too powerful? Since her call up in 2020, she's run through pretty much everyone she's faced, regardless of being champion or challenger. She's always the one to issue the challenge when it comes to stipulations. She's impressive. Rookie year alone is two, along with top five with Kurt, Brock, and others. But the issue is, truly feels like she's never really had a mountain to climb. Gimmick of being EST makes it worse because there's yet to truly be cases where she's come across someone who's more of a challenge. Becky outsmarted her at SummerSlam. Crowd hated it, despite it being the most important moment in her run. It showed humility, being humbled. When she had the feud with Doudrop, she did the Hogan Slam Andre spot in only week two. Well, the only problem in your argument when it comes to Doudrop is not Andre. You're just looking at the weight. You're not looking at the magnitude of the person. Bianca Belair could have picked up anybody that night that was that weight, and it would have felt the same way. Bianca Belair is one of their top talents. A lot of people think that she will be the nucleus of this company in a couple of years. So if she ran through a lot of people, she's backed it up in her work ethic, in her personality, how genuinely good she is outside of wrestling, role model, always, you know, seeing children, be an inspiration for people. You know, she's not bitchy. She doesn't complain. You know, she had every reason to totally flip out after what happened last year, and she just took it like a champ. And the funny thing is, everybody focused on what happened to Bianca losing to Becky at SummerSlam last year and Bianca basically being fucked until WrestleMania. But yet, don't bring up the fact of what Becky has gone through since WrestleMania of this year. Becky has been pretty much worse than Bianca, losing all the time, having meltdowns. So, yeah, Bianca may have been pushed a little bit too hard, but she has now cemented her foundation in WWE. And that is one person that you don't have to worry about getting up and leaving. You don't have to worry about controversy. You don't have to worry about a lot of things. There's no baggage as of right now. That could change down the line. But if you're going to focus around the women's division, Bianca Belair is a good choice. You want Charlotte Flair instead? You want Ronda Rousey? Liv Morgan is not in that position yet. Becky Lynch has been there, done that. Naomi and Sasha are not on TV. We don't know if they'll ever be back. Bailey has been injured. Dana Brooke is, you go down the list. Who else? Who else? All right, final question. So we're going to go 90 minutes, which is good. I want to see if I can finish exactly in 90 minutes. All right, Roderick Howard. Let's throw this on the screen. Eddie Batista, Randy Orton. Hey, DT, I heard that prior to Eddie's passing in 2005, the plan was for an Eddie Guerrero, Batista, Randy Orton triple threat match with Orton winning the World Heavyweight title. He expects that Orton would have taken the title all the way to WrestleMania 22. Was an Orton-Batista title match the original plan? If Batista had still gotten injured, could Eddie have taken a spot versus Orton? Or would he have still had his plan program with Shawn Michaels? What about Kurt Angle? Could he have still, he could see still have made the move from Raw to SmackDown to challenge Randy Orton? What about Rey Mysterio? Could have been a challenger? Could he have been a challenger? Or does he even enter the title picture had Eddie not passed away? Well, I think all those answers is for somebody who was on a writing team. I will tell you from my memories of this, Eddie Guerrero versus Batista versus Randy Orton was definitely a match that was talked about. I do remember clearly on the early days in a Minority Report talking about this. Eddie Guerrero and Batista was definitely, you know, something. But, you know, remember Batista, Randy Orton, thumbs up, thumbs down. A lot of people thought that that was going to go a little bit further than what it did. So, yeah, I could definitely see the scenario where Randy Orton could have gotten that championship and held it all the way to WrestleMania 22. You know, the one thing that you could say looking back at that time, and you can't say it yet right now with Roman Reigns dominating the titles, but you put Roman Reigns aside. Let's say Roman Reigns retires tomorrow. You got Brock. All right, let's say Brock retires tomorrow. Now you realize between Seth and Drew and Lashley, when Cody comes back, they build Sami Zayn a little further. Maybe AJ Styles gets a little bit of resurgence. You realize that you could interchange any of them as a champion. And you're still elevating others. You know, Theory down the line is going to be someone to reckon with. Randy Orton at that time was only on TV for 3 years. So, you know, yeah, you could have replaced any of those guys. You could have had Angle versus Orton. You could have had Orton versus Eddie. You could have had Batista versus Orton. You could have had Batista versus Eddie. There are so many ways they could have gone that time. And that was what was so awesome about it. Because you look back at that era and no one person really stands out. A couple of years earlier, everybody was nauseated with Triple H being forced down our throats. Later on, Cena. But at that time, it was the playing field was very even. So yeah, all those scenarios could have very well happened. So, all right, everybody, I am out of here. It has been great. You can continue sending your questions. You don't have to wait. DonTony@DonTony.com. Very, very easy to remember. Or in the community section. You could always post a question there. I will save it. And then in 2 weeks, we will do another mailbag. And we'll get into all your questions and comments. So let me know what you thought about this mailbag. If you have any feedback from anything that I said, post it in the comment section. I will definitely read it. Others will as well, and we will comment accordingly. Be well, everyone. Thank you, and you all take care.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a podcaster. For me to live any other way was nuts. To me, those goody-good people who work shitty jobs for bum paychecks and took the subway to work every day and worried about their bills were dead. I mean, they were suckers. They had no balls. If I wanted something, I just took it. I ran everything. I paid the bills. I paid the hosts. I even paid the masked maniac. Everybody had their hands out. Everything was for the taking. We always called each other good fellas. You would always hear from somebody. You're gonna like Don Tony. He's all right. He's a good fella. He's one of us. But if you're part of my crew, nobody ever tells you they're gonna get rid of you. Doesn't happen that way. There weren't any arguments or curses like in the movies. See, your haters come with smiles. They come as your friends, the people who've claimed they care the most for your life. And now? Now that's all over. And that's the best part. Today everything is different. There's lots of action. I don't have to wait around for everything like everyone else. Oh, I didn't get the vaccine? Fuck you, vaccine me. Oh, your delivery guy has COVID? Fuck you, feed me. Right after I moved here, I ordered egg noodles and ketchup, and I got spaghetti with meat sauce. I'm no longer an average nobody, while they get to live the rest of their lives like a bunch of schnooks.